to these footsteps. You've just heard a man disappear. A man who walked into a house, took off his shoes, and vanished. Like magic. But that's not possible, you say. People don't just disappear. Well then, listen to Stand By for Adventure. In the living room of our host, the celebrated scientist, Dr. Juan Avillo, the firelight flickers over the faces of his guests. Richard Moore, correspondent, adventurer, Captain Quigley, retired merchant seaman, and Major Gordon, former army officer. They're in a jovial mood, and their laughter settles over the softly lighted room into silence. It's the captain who says,
"Speaking of things disappearing, I remember once seeing Houdini at the Hippodrome in New York cause an elephant to vanish right before my eyes."
Now, Captain, that sounds like an elephant fish story to me.
No, the captain's right. It was a sensation at the time. A magician's trick, of course.
Yeah, but if you can tell me how it's done, by golly, I've been puzzling over that trick for years.
Well, I don't know how Houdini made an elephant disappear, but I do know how Randy Bradford vanished.
A story, Moore?
Sure, if you'd like it.
Indeed we would. But what's this? A man vanished, you say?
Yes, as if into thin air. From a party given by Kurt Ballard. Randy was a young newspaper man I once knew.
Yeah, but you're going to tell us how he vanished, ain't you?
Well, that's part of the story, Captain. Well, the night was raw and cold. The gray sky hung low. I braced myself against the wind as I turned the corner into that short east side street. It ended abruptly at the river's edge. In front of Kurt's house, several red lanterns were swinging from their hooks on a portable maze of pipes that fenced in a hole in the pavement. Although I didn't know it then, there were danger lights of warning. Once inside Kurt Ballard's house, a trim maid in uniform directed me up a short stairway to the second floor. It was a crowded, merry party. Patricia Kingston, a girl I had known for several years, an editor of a magazine, was sitting on a velvet-covered couch. Randy Bradford lay on the floor beside her, his feet concealed under the silk fringe of the sofa. Patricia and Randy were solemn in spite of the gay laughter in the room. I sat down beside her and said hello, and another maid lowered a tray of refreshments before me. I was just about to select a large, luscious-looking concoction, but she said, "Oh, no. That one is for Mr. Bradford." Randy told me, through a sleepy yawn, that Kurt made them only upon request. So we chatted a few minutes, and then I realized there was a strange, troubled feeling between them, so I excused myself. Kurt was in an adjoining room. You know, he was something of a mystery, for although he was a wonderful host, nobody seemed to know much about him. Well, the party went on, and nothing unusual had happened. But just as I was saying goodbye, Patricia came in from the hallway. Her face had lost its color. "Randy's disappeared," she said. Kurt laughed. He said maybe Randy had gone home, which is where I was headed for the next minute. But I couldn't forget Patricia's white expression of alarm. It was almost as if she had seen a ghost. The next day was a rainy Saturday. About 4 o'clock, the buzzer sounded, and I opened the door to find Patricia, dripping wet, looking at me with wide, frightened eyes. "You've got to help me," she said. "Something terrible has happened to Randy. I don't know what, but I'm afraid." She then told me she had been to Randy's hotel. His bed hadn't been turned down, but in the desk she found a loose-leaf diary. "I brought along the page dated yesterday," she said, and pulled a folded sheet of paper from her coat pocket. "I cannot put this off," the diary read. "I think he realizes I know the truth. Tonight, after the party, I'm going to talk to him. Patricia must not know until it's over." Well, I asked whom he meant. She bit her lower lip nervously and hesitated. "I think it's Kurt," she said. "That's what upsets me, because now I'm afraid of Kurt. This last week he's been like a stranger, vicious, full of hate for Randy. I don't know what to do, Dick. You see, Randy knows I'm secretly engaged to Kurt, and Kurt's murderously jealous of him." Then she told me that on the night of the party, just before I arrived, Randy said he had something to give her before the evening was over. Something important. But shortly afterwards, when she looked for Randy, he was gone, without a word. "Last night at the party," she said, "Randy pushed off his shoes under the couch. Just before I came here today, I called at Kurt's. He wasn't there, but Randy's shoes were. Now, would a man as rational as we know Randy to be put on his coat and hat and go out into the cold winter night in his stocking feet? No, Dick. He must still be there, somewhere in that house. He must be dead. As the taxi pulled to a stop in front of Kurt's house, I remember thinking that the streets looked different somehow, but I was more concerned with Patricia's anxiety. A butler opened the door, and we went in. In the front living room, she pointed to one end of the sofa. I reached under it, and my hand brushed over a shoe. I pulled it out, and further back, I found the other one. Then I looked up and saw the butler in the doorway. He was staring at the shoes. He said, I thought for a moment they were mine. He then told us that on the previous day, before leaving for the hospital to see his brother, he had left a pair of shoes just under the bed in his room on the third floor. And when he returned the next morning, the shoes were gone. Both the Randy must have left the house wearing the butler's shoes. But even that was mere speculation, and didn't tell us where he had gone. We then questioned the two maids who served at the party, but neither of them had seen Randy leave the house. And no doubt Patricia and I were thinking the same thing. No human being walks into a house and completely disappears. One of three things must have happened. He was still there, hiding. Or he went out of his own free will, or somebody carried him out bodily. Patricia agreed that the first thing to do was to search the house thoroughly. So we did, from cellar to roof. We found nothing. And then we asked ourselves, did he walk out of his own accord wearing the butler's shoes? If so, why did he take the shoes? And how did he manage to disappear so completely? The third query was even more puzzling. For if somebody, namely Kurt, as Patricia obviously feared, had carried him out of the house, when had he done so? The party was in full swing when Randy vanished, and Kurt had been in evidence all evening. But thinking back over the night before, I remembered Randy yawning time and time again, sleepy yawns. And just then, as I was standing by the window looking out at the streaming rain, I saw something. Or rather, I didn't see something that quite clearly told me what had happened to Randy Bradford. At that moment, I felt a movement in the doorway. Patricia stood up. Her face turned pale with fright, for Kurt had arrived. He was staring at us with a sullen, puzzled expression in his eyes. I picked up the shoes. These belong to Randy, I said. We know where he is. Kurt didn't speak. He was thinking fast. He looked as guilty as anybody I've ever seen. Patricia saw it, too. She screamed and ran to my side, and Kurt, like an arrow, darted into the hallway and down the stairs. The next moment, the front door slammed. Oh, let him go, I said. We'll call the police. An hour later, the house was full of detectives. The rain had stopped, and darkness fell over the street as I told my version of what I believed had happened. Sometime the night before, after slipping off his shoes under the couch, Randy felt drowsy, and unnoticed he walked out of the room, up the stairs, and found his way to the butler's room on the third floor. Maybe he thought to stay awake, but the drug and the refreshment Kurt had given him was too potent. You see, Kurt was making sure Randy would be unable to keep the after-party appointment. So Randy fell into a deep sleep on the butler's bed, and sometime during the party, Kurt found him, fetched his hat and coat from the closet, and stretched the coat like a blanket over the sleeping man. When the guests were gone, Kurt noticed Randy had removed his shoes, and thinking the pair by the bedside were his, Kurt slipped them on the sleeping man's feet. Then he picked him up and took him out into the deserted winter night. I looked out of the window. The street repairman had arrived. In a moment, we heard their picks strike the newly laid pavement, and all of us filed out of the house and stood grimly waiting as they dug the hole deeper and deeper. Patricia was silent, holding tightly to my arm. The shovel stopped. One of the men climbed out. Yeah, he's there all right. Under the water main, he said. Patricia shuddered. Randy had been buried alive. He was wearing a butler's shoes. Later we learned that Kurt had questioned the workman. He knew the repairing job would be finished on Friday, that the workmen were to fill in the excavation the next morning, which they did. Doubtless Kurt pushed Randy's body under the water main and covered it with a layer of soil. Well, they took his body to the morgue and the post-mortem told us he had been drugged. But a letter in Randy's pocket told us even more. It was what he intended to give Patricia that night. As I remembered, he wrote, Darling Patricia, when I began investigating Kurt Ballard, I never thought he'd turn out to be Frederick Judon, whose last two wives, both wealthy women, mysteriously died. That's why you cannot marry Kurt, and why I've made an appointment to talk with him tonight after the party. I'm going to tell him what I know, and hope he'll leave New York, and you. Because, you see, I've been in love with you, Patricia, ever since those days, so long ago, when we walked home together from school and I held your hand. Didn't you suspect? Tonight, after I've talked with Kurt, I'll come by to see you. Wait for me. All my love, Randy. Well, gentlemen, when Patricia and I left the police station that night, the moon rode high in the midnight darkness. I didn't question her tears, and we walked silently up the long, deserted street, the echo of our footsteps following close behind us.
But did the police bring the murderer to justice?
3 weeks later, he was arrested at a seaport in Georgia, brought back for trial. But he never stood trial, Major. Alienists declared him insane.
For the record, Moore, what did you see from the window that told you where Randy's body was?
The newly patched pavement, Doctor.
Oh.
Yes, but if Patricia hadn't remembered the shoes, why, Randy might never have been found.
And the murderer would have gone scot-free. Well, you were quite a detective on that one, Moore.
Yes, indeed.
With Patricia's help and a little imagination.
Maybe you have some ideas about how that elephant of Houdini's vanished. I'd be mighty grateful, Moore, if you'd put your detecting mind on that one.
All right, Captain.
The fire has burned to glowing embers, and the room is almost dark as the three men take leave Dr. Avillo. The door closes, but they'll be back soon for another exciting story, so plan to be with them when they meet again and talk again, and invite you to stand by for adventure.